Alrighty, hour number three of our radio program, and this is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network, the day after Selection Sunday. So let the Monday March Madness begin, as this is when everyone parachutes into the college basketball world. If you have not been following college basketball all throughout the season, as it is bracket, 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 and more bracket talk, as you do have your four number one seeds in Auburn and Duke and Florida and Houston, and we will see who finds the way to get to San Antonio and be the four teams remaining, and we'll see who will be cutting down the nets. Obviously, coming off conference tournament weekend, you did see a lot of people start to love Florida nationally, even though they've been highly ranked for most of the year, and especially the last 2 months, but a lot of people are now talking about Florida or Duke. I feel like it's a decision between a lot of people that they're making to see who gets not only to the NCAA championship game, but who will be cutting down the nets and be having one shining moment playing. People are down in Auburn, so I'll be curious to see what the response is from Auburn, even though they are the number one overall seed. A lot of people starting to go Michigan State out of that south. I look at the Midwest region, as we did discuss earlier. Houston's road, if you know they could avoid Gonzaga in the second round, but even if Gonzaga does get there, that's going to be a tough matchup, but I think a lot of people are on Houston as well, and there's a lot of attention on Rick Pitino entering this NCAA tournament, and also Duke as well. But let's go out to the guest line right now and welcome in the most energetic voice when it comes to covering the NCAA tournament. I know that he loves his jobs with Fox and also with Peacock, but when I was watching the Selection Sunday show the other night, I was saying he needed to be on the desk with CBS, and that is from Fox Sports, NBC, Field of 68, the great John Fanta. John, how are you?
Zach, here we go. Buckle up, because the madness is here. And I feel like it's so fascinating in this sport, because you have this epic tournament that just produces moments like no other. Then I found myself in recent years, we're talking in April, because then there's another form of yes, chaos in this sport as well. The point is, you buckle in here, because now we are 72 hours away, less than that, from what I think is still the greatest event in American sports. There's just nothing that delivers the thrill like those first 2 days of March Madness.
Well, let's start with UNC. How irate are you that UNC got in?
So, I'm not irate. I'm disappointed in the committee. I'm disappointed. And if I were an Ohio State or an Indiana or a West Virginia, I'd be disappointed as well. Or a Boise State, I'd be disappointed as well. Because your message is to play people. Your message is that if you beat those people, you get rewarded. And there's just not a lot that makes sense at all with picking North Carolina as an at-large in this field. Not when West Virginia proved that they could play without Tucker DeVries, beat Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse. Now, has Kansas had as good of a year as one would have thought? No. But they're still a 7 seed. Beat Iowa State. Iowa State's been one of the best teams in the country. Over the last month, has not played their best basketball. But the results are supposed to matter. Beat Arizona on a neutral. Beat Gonzaga on a neutral. They have an All-American in Javon Small. Why were the Mountaineers left out of this field? And instead, a team that played in a conference that was only fifth in the country because of Duke, and I guess I'll say Clemson. But Zach, make it make sense. Where Louisville had the season that they had, and they're involved in an 8-9 game.
Yeah.
If you had said that coming in, how would you have ever put Carolina in the field? They have one high major win. One high major win.
But you know what? It's the name recognition, and it's the fact they're blue blood, right? That's the way I looked at it.
And it's the fact that you as the committee, and don't get me wrong, I love Dan Gavitt. I really, Dan is a friend. He is a friend. And David Warlock, who runs the media side, is a friend. And like a lot of friends in college sports, Zach. You and I both have them.
Sure.
But we are paid to talk about these things to the people that are tuning into your show. And I think it is the definition of BS when it is said that Bubba Cunningham is not involved in any discussions in the room. Because America, we're not dumb. And we know that any business or Fortune 500 company or association, the real deals get done when the meeting isn't happening in the room.
It's a good point.
The real deals get done at the state dinner or at the continental breakfast at the four-star, five-star hotel. So I just do not subscribe to any idea that that was right. And you knew that they were embarrassed when Cunningham showed up with Gil on the screen during that selection show. That was the biggest form of confirmation that they knew that this was going to be questioned. Zach, if you knew it was going to get scrutinized, if it looked wrong, smelled wrong, tasted bad, why did you still do it? You did it to do that guy a favor and to do the ACC a favor, and it was wrong. It was absolutely wrong. And I do not get worked up about snubs. Because in my opinion, the tournament's fine at 68. I would not expand it, and this shows it. These other teams that are on the outside looking in, okay, not going to get that worked up. But I do have a bone to pick with North Carolina getting in over a team like West Virginia, over a team like Indiana, who won at Michigan State, beat Purdue. When are we going to value results? Because clearly, the metrics are a moving target. I'm done saying they have a net of this, so now they're in. It ain't true.
John Fanta here with us. I know that you mentioned Louisville in that. And you could tell Pat Kelsey, who wears his emotions on his sleeves. That was the first thing I noticed during that selection show early. He was not happy with that seed line, and I get it. But out of all these matchups in the round of 64, I think Louisville-Creighton, to me, is the most intriguing one in that 8-9 game.
Yeah, I think next to probably Arkansas and Kansas for the personalities on the sidelines. But Louisville-Creighton's fascinating because Louisville's tempo-based, highly explosive offense. Chucky Hepburn's had an All-American season. And they're dangerous with Terrence Edwards as well. Brings NCAA tournament experience. And oh, by the way, Rain Smith. This point guard matchup is efficiency personified. Rain Smith versus Steven Ashworth. Two all-out contenders who have unlimited motors and are so composed and calm, cool, and collected. I am pumped to watch the point guard showdown. On the interior, that's the question of the game. Will James Scott be able to hang in with Ryan Kalkbrenner? And for Creighton, defensively, they're going to try to shut Louisville down from beyond the arc. Louisville, they've been very successful from three, and they can get hot in a hurry. They're going to try to say, let's take away the three-point line. Let's make their guards drive it towards the middle, and we've got the best rim protector in America in Ryan Kalkbrenner. So the dynamic there of the matchup, how about Greg McDermott, the job that he's done with a team that lost Pop Isaacs, they figure out a way to keep winning, and now you have Louisville back in the tournament for the first time in 6 years. How do they handle Lexington? You know, how do they handle that stage? I think there's pressure when you're close to home in that first tournament game. Whereas if you're Creighton, you're going in, you just played a road game at St. John's on Saturday night. Once you heard that roar inside Madison Square Garden, you're really not fazed by a whole lot. I'm very curious to see how that matchup goes. I think the key for Creighton is can they get enough supplemental shot making from Jemiah Neal, Isaac Trout, and Jax McAndrew? And the key for Louisville is don't let this frenetic pace that you sometimes play with get away from settling down and taking the right shots. And don't get frustrated by having to go up against Ryan Kalkbrenner.
John Fanta, let me stay in the South there since while we're on it. Auburn, they got the number one overall seed, so it's weird to say that a team seeded number one overall and they're getting disrespected. I know they've lost three out of the last four, but I've done it as well, where if you had asked me a month, 2 months ago, you know, who's going to go to the national championship game, I'd probably say, oh, it's Auburn and Duke. Now I look at that South, and I think that's where potentially the chaos could go, because I think many of us are now deferring to Michigan State. I even circled them as well. And I can't say I feel all that strong about Auburn, and I can't say I feel all that strong about Michigan State.
No, I think that there can be an openness here. This could be the region of chaos. And you know, it's interesting because you got North Carolina, San Diego State, and while I'm on the point, Zach, I'm going to say this. How a team performs in the NCAA tournament does not impact whether or not they should have been in the field or not, right? It's a new season. Anything can happen in this thing. Michigan State, to me, though, is as battle-tested, and they are as adaptable in a game as anybody in the country. So what I mean by that is they could play any game. They could play in the 80s. They could play in the 50s. They handle things defensively very well. They guard at all five positions. They make you work for everything you're going to get. And Jace Richardson has developed into this alpha. I like their draw. You know, I think Marquette can be dangerous. Anytime you know that there's an All-American and Cam Jones on the other side, obviously that's a challenge. But for Marquette, they're a team that's built to defend. I don't think they've defended great the last month of the season. New Mexico can give Marquette problems. First off, problems defensively, because how are you going to stop Donovan Dent and Nelly Jr. Joseph, Zach, where Marquette doesn't really have a true five-man? They've played smaller all year. Nelly could cause some problems there on the interior. But you're right. I mean, do I trust Texas A&M? Zach, I don't. I don't trust them offensively to win four games and make the Final Four. Do I trust Michigan? I do. But they got paired up with the 30-win team that's a trendy upset pick, even though it's really not an upset, in UC San Diego. And you know what UC San Diego does as well as anybody? Turn you over. What's Michigan's flaw? Turnovers. So this is an open South region. I have Michigan State coming out of it because I think that they are such a tough team that doesn't rely on one or two pieces, but they truly, between Trey Holloman and Cohen Carr and the evolution of Jackson Kohler inside, that's a big key to this whole operation because we were walking into it, we're like, are they really going to get center play consistently? Kohler's finally turned the corner, and I think Tom Izzo in his 30th year has a prime setup here to be Mr. March, if not Mr. April.
John Fanta here with us. Going to the right side, the East and the Midwest, I would be very disappointed, and I'm looking at the roads here, of Duke and Houston if we don't see them in the Final Four in San Antonio, especially Houston. I know the second round, that could get a little bit funky if you do see Gonzaga, just with the job that Mark Few has done. Tennessee's a good team, but they don't scare me when I look at this. Do you feel the same way when you look at the roads for Duke and Houston to get to San Antonio?
You know, the trendy pick is Gonzaga to knock off Houston by some people. What people fail to realize is that Gonzaga still has to go through a Georgia team that I think is better than people give them credit for and has a stud in Asa Newell, who's a top 10 pick, Blue Kane and Silas Demery. And Zach, we've learned to know this in the NCAA tournament. When everybody's on a team, that opponent sees it all week long, hears about it all week long. And I still think Gonzaga will win that game. But if you can suffocate Ryan Nembhard and make his life difficult, that's the head of the snake. That should be the priority. Why do people think Houston can't do that? Doesn't that play right into the cards there? You know, I think name plays a part, but man, that streak of nine Sweet 16s, I think it ends here, and I think Houston does prevail. Duke, to me, has the easiest path to a Final Four. Mississippi State, really good defensive team. Josh Hubbard's a stud. I don't trust them enough on the offensive end of the floor. You're going to have to be elite offensively to beat Duke because of the way they guard. Baylor, actually a good offensive team. You know, I think Edgecombe's had a nice year. Norchad Omier is a really strong player, but they don't guard. And if you're not going to match Duke's defensive intensity, if you're not going to guard Tyrese Proctor and you're not going to guard Konkanipple, by the time it's said and done, remember Dante DiVincenzo, 2018 National Championship game? Konkanipple could be the DiVincenzo figure of this tournament and have one of those games that makes you say, wow, I knew he was a lottery pick, but damn, you know, maybe it's more than that. They're not going to lose Mississippi State or Baylor. Zach, Arizona's all over the place. Tommy Lloyd has not shown he can win in the tournament. Oregon's a bit dangerous, but they don't have the firepower offensively. You know, unless Jackson Shellstead or Keyshawn Barthelemy have a terrific run. And look, Oregon's in danger because Liberty's dangerous.
Sure.
Richie McKay is the 12 seed there is interesting. The matchup in the East that I'm most intrigued about is BYU-VCU.
Hmm. BYU's a good team.
Really good team. And you know what? They're peaking at the right time. They've won 9 of 10. Richie Saunders is a stud. They have a Swiss Army knife defensively with Moat Mag. And Yegor Demin, I think, if you're a basketball junkie, watch Yegor Demin play. He's really interesting as a prospect from an upside standpoint. And Kevin Young runs really good stuff. But VCU is a pressure team that defends, top 25 defense. And Max Shulga's a stud. Shulga is a stud. So I thought VCU got a tough draw there. You know, out of the one bid Atlantic 10, that's a league that really has to look in the mirror and try to figure out a way to get more teams.
In the West, and I hate to go chalk here, but I want to see Florida. I want to see St. John's. Now, obviously, if you make me pick between Bill Self and Calipari, I think Self's the better coach, but I'd rather see Patino obviously up against Calipari. But that's another one. I know St. John's, right? Their defense, unbelievable. We saw the run that they went on Friday night. Up against Marquette in a game they were down 24-9 and just how they take over that game. They're streaky shooting the ball, but I think their offense is better than what some of the stats say. If we don't see Florida and St. John's in the Elite Eight for a trip to go to San Antonio, I think I'd be disappointed when I look at the West.
Well, I don't disagree with you. However, I do think there's a really dangerous team if they can win their first round game. I think either one of them. Maryland, Memphis, if we get that in the second round, which chances are we won't. Because 12-13, you figure one of them wins. But, Zach, if we get that game, that's a Sweet 16 game in the round of 32. It would be a phenomenal basketball game. Because you're talking about the firepower of Memphis' backcourt, Dane Danger inside, Julian Reese and Derek Queen. Honestly, I hated to see those two programs in the same pod and in the same region as the hottest team in the country. That's why the West region, for me, is the region of death. Like, that is that's gates of hell. Type of activity there between the coaches, the brands. I mean, you have the back-to-back reigning national champion UConn Huskies there, and that's what Florida has to do in all likelihood to get through to the Sweet 16. Are they better than UConn? Should they beat UConn? On paper, yes. But you and I both know that's not how these games get decided. So I agree. Florida and St. John's will be a dream matchup. You just said it. St. John's trait that makes you trust them in March is that they are elite at settling into a game, and no deficit is insurmountable. 4-0 in games in which they are trailing by 15 or more. 7-1 in games in which they trail by double figures. It is remarkable, and really the reason why is because they have two guards who can break you down defensively with R.J. Lewis and Kadari Richmond. Off the dribble, Zach, they're just tremendous. And Zubi Ejiofor is a Tonka truck inside.
Let me ask you, in the coaching cycle right now, right? Villanova, and obviously you get into Indiana, you know, NC State opens up, you know, all that talk about Will Wade as well. But last year, I feel like it went, all right, Danny Hurley staying in college or going to the Lakers. There wasn't really a significant talk. I know, right, Kentucky and stuff was thrown in there for Danny Hurley, but no one thought Danny Hurley was leaving UConn to go to another college job. But the names were, okay, is Scott Drew going to leave Baylor? He didn't. And then it was Dusty May and Pat Kelsey. A year later, Dusty May, Pat Kelsey, they look pretty damn good. When you get into the Villanovas of the world, which is a very good job, when you get into Indiana as well, like, who are the names that you're hearing that could be on the move in this coaching cycle?
Well, Richard Pitino has done a remarkable job at New Mexico, and I think he's going to land a job here, somewhere more east. I think Ryan Odom at VCU is in position to get either Virginia or Villanova. I'd be surprised if he didn't get one of those two jobs. TJ Otzelberger comes up often, but I think he's genuinely happy at Iowa State, and I don't think he'll be on the move. Ben McCollum's done an amazing job at Drake and is going to have the opportunity to get a bigger job, and keep an eye on him for Indiana. We haven't heard much about Buzz Williams yet, but I think that could heat up once A&M is eliminated. Buzz has obviously moved from school to school, sometimes rather quickly, and might be time there, but it also might be time for him to try to find, you know, somewhere else that he wants to go. I will give you a dark horse name, Zach, that I think is interesting here in the coaching carousel, and that is Mick Cronin. I think that there's a world where Mick may still want to come back east or may want to go back towards family, and maybe he goes away from Los Angeles. And it's not anything against UCLA. I just, all those comments that he made this year, the travel situation there, I don't know if that's Mick. You know, in the Big Ten, I just wonder if he ever considers potentially taking a different job and having a change of scenery to get somewhere that's closer to where he's from. You know, he's a Midwest guy. So we'll see what happens. But another guy, Nico Medved at Colorado State. I think Nico Medved is a really good coach who's done a remarkable job there. They have a great first-round matchup. I mean, I'm super intrigued to see what happens when they go up against the Memphis Tigers. I think there's a bunch of upset picks. And
About Chris Collins at Nova? Are you buying that?
You know, I think that – so, Chris, I'm buying that it's being talked about. I'm buying that it's being talked about. I don't know if I'm buying that it's just that it's as far along as people think. You know, it's interesting because Mark Jackson was the athletic director at Villanova, and he goes from Villanova to Northwestern. And he goes from Villanova to Northwestern because I think in essence he doesn't want to be the one to fire the guy he hired, Kyle Neptune, and to take football and to have a Big Ten AD job. But you're still moving your family, heading to Chicago. I think Chris Collins is a good candidate, Zach. And I think Chris Collins is a really good coach. But I'd be surprised if Villanova just looks at Chris Collins and that's the hire and it's done and over with. Because to me, this is a program that won two national championships in the last decade. I feel like that job's still pretty competitive, especially when whoever takes that job, you're the face of the school. You're not battling with football. And oh, by the way, you didn't have to be the guy who replaced the guy. You get to be the guy who replaced the guy who replaced the guy. So that's a better, much better job to have than to be in the Neptune seat. I think Collins is certainly on the radar, but I think it's a fluid situation, and I wouldn't say anything's done yet. I like Chris. I think it's a fine hire if Villanova makes it. But I think they need to be thorough in this search.
He's the great John Fanta. You can catch him all throughout the NCAA tournament. Obviously, check out his stuff, Field of 68. Whenever these tournament games end, the late night recaps, the Field of 68, and watching that stuff late into the night on Twitter, they do a phenomenal job. John, we appreciate it as always. Thank you.
Zach, in other breaking news, I can confirm that John Calipari and Rick Pitino will not be going out to dinner in Providence.
Yeah, little veal parmesan, maybe. The two of them could go be eating or something like that. Johnny, thank you.
Thanks, Zach.
There you go. The great John Fanta joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's take a break. We'll come on back with Onside Offside.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
Alrighty, Onside, Offside time. Samter, what do we got cooking today?
All right, well, as expected, the Falcons chose to keep Kirk Cousins for the time being, at least, triggering a $10 million clause in his contract. The team has been clear that Michael Penix will be their starter, and there's still, of course, a chance they move Cousins before the start of the season. So onside, offside, the Falcons should trade Cousins before the draft.
So I want them to trade him. And I think people are going to be surprised by this answer, but you worded it a very particular way. Should they trade Cousins? So you have Michael Penix Jr., who they have made it clear he's their next quarterback. I don't think Michael Penix Jr. gets benched because of poor play this year. But Michael Penix Jr., even though he's found his groove and has been able to stay on the field the last 3 years, the two at Washington, and then also, you know, the three games he played in the NFL, he had a lot of injuries before that. And I mean a lot of injuries. So you already paid Kirk Cousins what you're going to pay him. like 110, I think, guaranteed or whatever out of the 180, whatever it was. 100 million guaranteed, whatever. So you're paying Penix nothing because he's a rookie. So if you're not going to get something back really of significance in the trade, I understand it's like not in good faith because Kirk wants to go start somewhere at the end of his career and you're kind of screwing it over. But I would kind of keep him on the roster at that point because you have to allocate all this money anyway at the quarterback position. And now you've already triggered a $10 million clause in his contract. If you're going to get rid of him, you should have got already rid of him. So should they trade Kirk Cousins before the draft? I'm going to say you wait after the draft. Still think about keeping him for the season and see who's the odd team is out. And then maybe you could drive up the price more for Kirk Cousins because then you have some leverage. So I would go right now on sides or offsides, excuse me, when you ask me the Falcons to trade Kirk Cousins before the draft.
Offside.
Interestingly worded question right there.
Intentional.
Before the draft and should.
Yes.
Those are things that really stick out to me.
Now, while all eyes have been on Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, one name has gone under the radar. Former Browns and Bucks quarterback Jameis Winston, the former number one overall pick in 2019 NFL passing yards
leader. Under the radar?
What?
Has he really gone under the radar?
I mean, Heisman winner, former number one overall pick, led the league in passing in 2019.
He's not a starter, though.
Well.
Is this the question?
Well, this is part of the question.
And also, you can't say he's flown under the radar. Now I will take issue with the wording of this question when I just praised you. The guy was all over your TV screen during the Super Bowl.
Yes, and no one's talking about where he might be going next year.
Okay.
That's continue. What I mean. Not flying under the radar as far as in our minds, but as far as like where he's going to play next year. Now, he will be meeting with the Giants tomorrow and is among the options for Big Blue with Rodgers, Russ, and also Joe Flacco. So onside, offside, if the Giants do miss out on Aaron Rodgers, they should sign Jameis over Russ and Flacco.
Oh, boy. I would go offside. I think Russ is still the best quarterback out of the three. So that's what, you know, right now, if you're asking me to start a whole season over 2025, Jameis, though, in the New York media market would be fun. So if the Giants miss out on Rodgers, they should sign Jameis over Russ and Flacco. Jameis over Flacco, yes. Not Jameis, though, over Russ. So that makes it an offside.
Offside.
Question number three.
Now, Sam Darnold signed a team-friendly deal with the Seahawks for 3 years and $105 million. However, as Mike Florio reports, and as you got right on social media as well.
Ha! Funny how that works. I got criticized for this by one older member of the media.
A Hall of Fame voter, nonetheless.
Yeah.
Apparently, Seattle can get out of the deal after just 1 year and $37.5 million and owe Darnold nothing after 2025.
You think Gary Meyer's going to bring this up at all? You know, he was very quick to go after me on Twitter. You know, low risk, high reward. What are you talking about? They're making $55 million a year. Ah!
I'll keep my eye on his account, but don't expect a mea culpa from him.
Get off my lawn, Gelb! Get off my lawn!
Now, onside, offside, Sam Darnold will be the Seahawks starting quarterback after the 2025 season.
Onsides. I think they will at least give him 2 years. They could easily get out of it, like we have discussed, but I think that he will at least be the plan there. It'd have to go really bad, like horrifically bad, for this to be one and done, which it could. Seeing ghosts, getting mono, Sam. But in this case, I think he'll be there for at least two seasons. So Sam Darnold will be the Seahawks starting quarterback after 2025. I will go on sides.
Now, quarterbacks are getting paid. First, we saw the Panthers give J.C. Horn a record deal. And now the Texans up the ante by giving Derek Stingley Jr. more than Horn. The former number three overall pick got a monster three-year, $90 million deal to make him the richest corner in history. Onside, offside, Derek Stingley Jr. is more important to the Texans' defense than Will Anderson Jr.
Derek Stingley is phenomenal. I think he's the third best defensive back in football right now. I would go Pat Surtain 1, Sauce Gardner 2, and Derek Stingley 3. But Will Anderson Jr. is a pass rusher. So I think the position and the defensive end that he plays impacts the game more than corner, both very important. So I will take the pass rusher over the corner. So you asked me, Derek Stingley is more important to the Texans defense than Will Anderson Jr. Offside.
Offside.
Now, the Thunder are all but locked into the number one seed in the West, but as many as seven teams are battling for the second seed. The T-Wolves have won 8 straight. The Warriors have won 7 straight. The Lakers just snapped that 4-game losing streak. And the surprise Rockets currently hold the second seed after they won their sixth straight on Saturday. So onside, offside, you believe the Rockets can make the Western Conference Finals this year?
Yeah, that Ime Udoka is a pretty good coach. You know, just make sure he's not going in the DMs or texting anybody or showing up at somebody else's house, you know, that is in the organization that I think was sleeping with him allegedly. And then it was some higher up in the organization's wife. You know, coach, keep it on the court. That's all I'm going to say. Because when he keeps it on the court, he's a very good coach. You believe the Rockets can, not will, can.
Let's go with can, because will, it's there's too much to make an exact prediction right now. But do you think that they're good enough to make a run through the Nuggets, through the Lakers, through the Warriors, through the Thunder, and get to that finals?
I'm going to say they're out in the second round. That's what I'm going to go with. I wanted to say because of can, like, yes, they can. But it's tough for me to really envision that team being in the Western Conference Finals. So I will go offsides there.
Offside.
All right, last one, a late addition. It might be the offseason, but our guy, Coach Prime, not Dion, Coach Prime.
Yes, we are believers.
We are believers, is still making waves to Colorado. When announcing the team's upcoming spring game on ESPN2, Coach Prime had a unique idea to help make spring games more valuable for programs.
Actually, I like to play against another team in the spring. That's what I'm trying to do right now, to have it competitive. Playing against your own guys kind of get monotonous, and you really can't tell the level of your guys. Because, you know, it's the same old, same old. Everybody kind of know each other. Towards the end, I would like to style it like the pros. I would like to practice against someone for a few days, then you have the spring game. And I think the public will be satisfied with that tremendously. I think it's a tremendous idea.
Of course it's a tremendous idea because Coach Prime came up with it.
Joint practices.
Yeah, it's exactly what it's like. You know, he has an NFL background, and so he's probably bringing more NFL to college. So onside, offside, you would like to see college programs face each other in spring games rather than just have glorified scrimmages.
So would I rather see this? Yes, I would. Do I think this is happening? Absolutely not. Now, two things off this. One, why it could potentially happen. The other, though, why I don't think you'll have many schools that will bite here. How many coaches are changing or altering their games, their spring games, their traditional spring games, because they don't want the TV coverage, people to see it, and then them basically go try to steal their players in the NIL. So here you have Colorado, right? That's like the kings of marketing. Oh, bring your players to us pretty much for 3 days. I don't know who's going to be willing to jump. Now, if you're a smaller school, if you're a small fish in a big pond, like, I don't know, maybe a school that has already said they would go to Boulder for 3 days. Like a Syracuse, Fran Brown, who has already tweeted out to Deion Sanders, even though I call him Coach Prime, but his Twitter is at Deion Sanders, we will come to Boulder for 3 days. That's a good spot for Fran Brown and company to go get thrown into the national spotlight more. But do I think Alabama? Do I think Georgia? Do I think Oregon? Right, your big boy programs, Ohio State, Texas. Do I think they're going to Boulder for 3 days to do joint practices for spring? No, I do not.
Now, one quick thing I think would be really fun, if either DeSean Jackson brought his Delaware State or Eddie George brought Bowling Green State or Michael Vick brought Norfolk State over there, that'd be kind of cool to see Deion and some other former coaches who are former players who are now coaching some of these programs.
Yeah, I'd like a little bigger of a program. Like Syracuse would be a good one. I think that'd be fun. And Fran Brown, he has one of the best personalities in college football.
He's fun.
I've known Fran for a long time. So you would like to see college football programs face off against each other in spring games rather than just glorified scrimmages? Yeah, I would like to see it onside. So I think it's going to happen. Not so optimistic on that. All righty, we'll take a timeout. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network, one more segment to play. We will come on back. We'll reset the Cincinnati Bengals, who paid Jamar Chase, T. Higgins. Will they pay Trey Hendrickson? And what does this mean for the future of the AFC? Update time first. Here's Zach. All right, it's time to answer Ask the Pros. Question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Rick in Omaha says, Zach, who are your top five teams right now with free agency underway leading into the draft out of the AFC? You could submit a question by tweeting at INF Sportsnet or at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B, using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. By the way, if you missed the announcement earlier, I'll answer the question in just a second. We have a new phone line number. That's for the network, 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476. So that's the new number here on the Infinity Sports Network. I think my answer, 1, 2, 3 won't surprise people. 4, 5 is really where the conversation goes. In the AFC heading into this season, Chiefs still got to be 1. I would say the Bills beat the Ravens in the playoffs, so the Bills have to be 2. I also think they have the second best quarterback in the sport in Josh Allen. And then I put the Baltimore Ravens in at 3. And I'd be curious, Bills and Ravens, does either Joey Bosa or DeAndre Hopkins hit 4 years ago? Big news. Now it's how healthy can they be and how much gas do they have left in the tank? So those to me are the easy 1, 2, 3. Chiefs, Bills, Ravens. So for 4, 5, that's where it gets tricky. Because the Bengals, we don't even know if Trey Hendrickson's going to be back. There's been differentiating reports out there on that. We know they got Ja'Marr Chase taken care of, the highest non-paid quarterback in the NFL. And then they made T. Higgins the highest number 2 wide receiver ever in the NFL. So that's taken care of. Your offense is taken care of. Sure, you got to get off to a better start to the season. You got to block better for Joe Burrow. But you got Burrow, you got Ja'Marr Chase, you got T. Higgins. Just like last year, you may not win enough games to get into the postseason, but you still got to put up a ton of points. Hendrickson, if he comes back, great. Still got a lot of work to do. If they get rid of him, then you have even more work to do. But I would still put the Bengals at 4, because even though we just saw a Super Bowl where a complete team won and it was dominated in the trenches, and outside of Hendrickson, I don't love Cincinnati in the trenches, I still look at that firepower. If the Bengals could just get off to a good start, they're going to be there in the field to 7 out of the AFC at the end of the year. You can't afford to get off to another slow start once again. I know people say, oh, it's what the Bengals do. Baloney. Stop it. So I would say because of the firepower that they have on offense, I would still go Cincinnati 4. But at number 5, I'm not going to the Dolphins. I got to see who the Steelers quarterback is first before I could even give this evaluation. I know people are going to say the Texans. I understand why they moved off Laramie Tunsil, but that offensive line was a problem last year, and it's now even more of a question mark this year. And I love me some Will Anderson. I love me some Danielle Hunter. I think C.J. Stroud is going to be a really good quarterback for a while in this league. We got to see when Tank Dell comes back. I like Nico Collins. I know they brought in Christian Kirk. But now I think we even kind of put the Texans, they should win the division. But I got to wait to after the draft to see a clearer picture of what this team is going to be. So that leaves me in the AFC West. And you get down to the Chargers and you get down to the Broncos. Now, I'm more pro Harbaugh than Sean Payton. And I think Justin Herbert's better than Bo Nix. But Bo Nix was very impressive last year. And, you know, you got Cortland Sutton there. I would have liked to see them add Cooper Kupp, but Cooper Kupp goes to the Seahawks. I know they were in the mix there. And defensively, that's a good defense. With Sertan, what Benito has done the last 2 years, and then they go on out there, and they got Hufanga, and they also got Dre Greenlaw coming over from the 49ers. So the question was worded based off what's happened so far in the offseason, who's your top 5 in the AFC? In the power rankings, I'm going to say still the Chiefs because of just what their roster already was. Bills, Ravens, I'm still going to put the Bengals in there because of the offensive firepower. And then I'm actually going to put the Broncos in at the 5th spot right now, which is funny. And Sampson even looked up like, what the heck is this guy saying? Because I thought the Broncos last year were going to be a bottom 5 team in the NFL. And maybe there's some year 2 regression by Bo Nix. But Sean Payton did a heck of a job last year. And I really like that defense. And there's not a lot of complete teams in the AFC too. You look at it, the Texans are the one I feel the worst leaving out of the top 5. But I got to see who's going to be blocking for them. And really, putting the Bengals in at four is more so just out of respect to Joe Burrow and just hoping they get off to a better start this year. Because still, it wasn't like they were a bad team last year. They just missed out in the postseason. So if they get off to a better start, I know there's still questions on their defense in theory, then you would think they'd be better and get back into the postseason coming up next season in the NFL. All righty, that will do it for a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Ton of college basketball today. I guess I'll put out a bracket on Wednesday. One listener, Syke Mamter, he made a Zach Gelb Show bracket if you want to join that. I guess I will join that. That's not me running it, but that's the immortal Syke Mamter. And he put together a hickey song for Wednesdays. So Syke Mamter, it's like the best employee we have, and we don't even pay him. It's kind of crazy there, Mike.
Yeah, I'm not buying that you're not Syke Mamter.
I'm not.
Uh-huh.
If I was Syke Mamter, I'd be following myself.
Syke doesn't follow you?
Oh, no, sorry. I would be following Syke Mamter. I said that wrong.
Listen, that's what and Kevin Durant said, too.
No. Trust me. Unlike Kevin Durant, I would tell you if I had a burner. You go into my Twitter account, there's two Twitter accounts. It's my account, and it's the Infinity Sports Network. That's it. That's all that's there. No, I'm not a burner guy. Never have, never will be. But anyway, big thanks to Shaka Smart for joining us today. Big thanks to Brad Underwood and John Fanta as well, as we talk a little Marquette, we talk a little Illinois, and we also talk about the NCAA tournament. I'll be back tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. Alex is armed. Thank you so much. Maybe we'll do a little soccer for you tomorrow. Don't hold your breath. And big thanks to Samter and obviously Ack and each and every one of you for tuning into the program. We will talk manana, everybody. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.